Chapter 39, The Nature and Influence of the Testimonies.
As the end draws near, and the work of giving the last warning to the world extends, it becomes more important for those who accept present truth to have a clear understanding of the nature and influence of the testimonies, which God in His providence has linked with the work of the third angel's message from its very rise. In the following pages are given extracts from what I have written during the last 40 years, relating to my own early experience in this special work, and also presenting what God has shown me concerning the nature and importance of the testimonies, the manner in which they are given, and how they should be regarded. Quote, "It was not long after the passing of the time in 1844 that my first vision was given me. I was visiting a dear sister in Christ whose heart was knit with mine. Five of us, all women, were kneeling quietly at the family altar. While we were praying, the power of God came upon me as I had never felt it before. I seemed to be surrounded with light, and to be rising higher and higher from the earth. At this time I had a view of the experience of the Advent believers, the coming of Christ, and the reward to be given to the faithful. In a second vision, which soon followed the first, I was shown the trials through which I must pass, and that it was my duty to go and relate to others what God had revealed to me. It was shown me that my labors would meet with great opposition, and that my heart would be rent with anguish, but that the grace of God would be sufficient to sustain me through all. The teaching of this vision troubled me exceedingly, for it pointed out my duty to go out among the people and present the truth. One great fear that oppressed me was that if I obeyed the call of duty and went out declaring myself to be one favored of the Most High with visions and revelations for the people, I might yield to sinful exaltation and be lifted above the station that was right for me to occupy, bring upon myself the displeasure of God, and lose my own soul. I had before me several cases such as I have here described, and my heart shrank from the trying ordeal. I now entreated that if I must go and relate what the Lord had shown me, I should be preserved from undue exaltation. Said the angel, "Your prayers are heard and shall be answered. If this evil that you dread threatens you, the hand of God will be stretched out to save you. By affliction He will draw you to Himself and preserve your humility. Deliver the message faithfully. Endure unto the end, and you shall eat of the fruit of the tree of life and drink of the water of life." At this time, there was fanaticism among some of those who had been believers in the first message. Serious errors in doctrine and practice were cherished, and some were ready to condemn all who would not accept their views. God revealed these errors to me in vision, and sent me to His erring children to declare them. But in performing this duty, I met with bitter opposition and reproach. It was a great cross for me to relate to the erring what had been shown me concerning them. It caused me great distress to see others troubled or grieved, and when obliged to declare the messages, I would often soften them down and make them appear as favorable for the individual as I could, and then would go by myself and weep in agony of spirit. I looked upon those who had only their own souls to care for, and thought, if I were in their condition, I would not murmur. It was hard to relate the plain, cutting testimonies given me of God. I anxiously watched the result, and if the persons reproved rose up against the reproof, and afterward opposed the truth, these queries would arise in my mind. Did I deliver the message just as I should? Could there not have been some way to save them? And then such distress pressed upon my soul that I often felt that death would be a welcome messenger, and the grave a sweet resting place. I did not realize the danger and sin of such a course until, in vision, I was taken into the presence of Jesus. He looked upon me with a frown and turned his face from me. It is not possible to describe the terror and agony I then felt. I fell upon my face before him and had no power to utter a word. Oh, how I longed to be covered and hid from that dreadful frown! Then could I realize in some degree what the feelings of the lost will be when they cry, "Mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb." Presently an angel bade me rise, and the sight that met my eyes can hardly be described. Before me was a company whose hair and garments were torn, and whose countenances were the very picture of despair and horror. They came close to me and rubbed their garments upon mine. As I looked at my garments, I saw that they were stained with blood. Again, I fell like one dead at the feet of my accompanying angel. I could not plead one excuse, and longed to be away from that holy place. The angel raised me to my feet and said, "This is not your case now, but this scene has passed before you to let you know what your situation must be if you neglect to declare to others what the Lord has revealed to you." With this solemn warning before me, I went out to speak to the people the words of reproof and instruction given me of God.